Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Nathan Totten, and today we're joined by guest host Corey Fowler. Everyone should know you. You've been on the show a few times.
Yep.
And for the news, we're joined by Karsten Januszewski, who is going to be showing us some cool new, I'll let you introduce it, but some cool new new things.
New things.
So we've got a few news items, and then we're gonna go into what Karsten's going to show us. So our first little piece of news is an exciting one for academic research. We announced that we have a deal with, a promotion or something, whatever you call it, a deal with academic researchers who are using Windows Azure. We're no longer going to be charging them for bandwidth, so we're enabling like universities. I think this is especially relevant to like the big data type scenarios for people who are going to be doing using the cloud for like a lot of university analytics research stuff. So kind of cool, you know. I guess Microsoft giving back, always good. And then our next bit of news, I'll let Corey talk about.
Yeah. So yesterday, the Patterns and Practices team had a symposium. And they featured a lot of great content on using the Windows Azure platform, so definitely something worthwhile checking out.
Cool. Yeah. It's so all the we'll have a link to it on the site, but a lot of videos recorded showing common patterns and practices on how to use Windows Azure. So a lot of really great content from the Patterns and Practices team. Okay. Cool. So next, I'll let Karsten introduce his newest work.
You bet. So we released Visual Studio Achievements last January to the developer community to much success.
Yep.
It's been downloaded over 80,000 times. And for those who don't know what it does, it takes the idea of achievements, which some people may be familiar with Xbox gaming or World of Warcraft, or even Angry Birds has achievements. So
nice.
We brought that concept of gamification, as they call it in the industry, to Visual Studio, where when you did different coding behaviors, you got achievements. And then those achievements would be posted on a server, and we had a leaderboard, et cetera, et cetera.
Cool.
So we released our first version, had a lot of somewhat, you know, some cheeky achievements, like lonely, if you were coding on a Friday night.
That one pretty quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we had some more, you know, ones that kind of showed off features of Visual Studio that people might not know about, like IntelliTrace. And so it's both fun and also something where you could learn more about Visual Studio and also show off your prowess as a developer to the world. It can be kind of a lonely activity, coding, you know, but you can show everyone, hey, I got this badge or whatnot.
It definitely kept me up at night.
There you go. All right. Well, I'm glad you're a user. So you'll be excited as an Azure dev. So the announcement is we have 15 new achievements that we're adding to the extension, all based on Azure development.
Cool. Okay. Very nice.
So here, if we want to take a look at some of them. So basically, if you install the achievement, the latest version, you will get the version that supports all these new achievements. It's version 2.0.
Okay.
And if Visual Studio, will prompt you to update your extension. So if you have the old one, get the newest one. And you can see some of our Azure achievements. So here's our landing page for Visual Studio Achievements. Here's all our achievements, and the Azure ones are down at the bottom because they're alphabetical. So
it's an outrage. We need to
push those up a little bit.
Yeah. So we've got, you know, unleashing Windows Azure, so database darling, using SQL Azure. We detect the publish event. So if you publish from Visual Studio, we'll listen for that event. If you publish 10 times from Visual Studio, you'll get keep heading into the cloud.
Cool.
We've got things like using performance profiling, using Windows Azure caching.
That 10 times one is probably the achievement that takes the longest time to achieve, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got some stuff that feature some of the more obscure parts of the SDK, like using page blobs or using the timeout features of Azure queues. And then we've got ones for your toolkit. So if you use his social gaming toolkit, you can get an achievement.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
And the phone, you have the phone achievement,
and we also
have the phone toolkit also, right?
The phone toolkit as well.
Very cool. So you were going to show us a quick demo
on
kind of how that works?
We'll get the easiest one to get. So we got a project here. It has a web role, and it has a worker role. So one of the achievements is called Union Jack. And all it is if you use a worker role in your project, you can get the achievement. So we'll go ahead and compile. Most of the achievements get rewarded based on when you compile. So we spawn up a thread in the background when we detect the build event, and we analyze your code, look at XML files, look at use fxcop to look at your to look at objects. So let's go ahead and compile. Everyone watch the lower corner of the screen.
Awesome.
Oh, you got it.
That's right. What is the...
On the shoulder of giants is if you reference 25 assemblies.
Ah.
So cumulatively between these three projects.
That's the default. I don't know if that's good or bad. that's the default starting point of the project. So.
No comment.
Great.
So, well, you can come here and see all the achievements you have earned. So right from Visual Studio, I can see I've got the Union Jack on the, and then this one. And here I can see all the achievements I don't have. If I click on it, so that takes me to that achievement that I earned. So this is a unique URL. I could tweet that, Facebook it, so that I could share the fact that I got the Union Jack achievement.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then where do you get the widget so our viewers could put this out onto their
blog
and show off their
skills? That's what I was going to show. So here's my blog. So let me refresh it since I got those achievements. And so here I've added this widget to my blog, you know, and you can see the achievements I have and the number of points I've got. And the widget, everything you need can be found over on Channel 9. So the widget is posted here. If you want to get the extension, you can click the download now, which will bounce you out to the Visual Studio gallery.
Cool.
You can also install it right from Visual Studio. So if you go to, I don't know if people, some people don't realize this. If you go to Extension Manager, you can just search right here for extensions that you can add in.
Cool.
So.
Thanks for showing that. That's exciting to see. Another fun addition to the Windows Azure development family or whatever.
For sure.
So, all right, great. Well, thanks for joining us. Now we've got our featured segment.
Oh,
this was sort of a pre-feature segment,
right.
A little different. We normally only have one guest. This, we had such exciting news, we wanted to bring you on. So now we have our feature segment, so let's do that. And now we're back for our feature segment. We're joined by Krishna Anumar Lasetti. He's a member of the... Well, actually, why don't you introduce yourself? That might make more sense.
Sure. Thanks, Nick. I am responsible for the Windows Azure security and compliance primarily, and I work in the Windows Azure risk management team, primarily on the core services, which is compute, storage, VM role, those things, and the networking.
Cool. So two episodes ago, we actually talked about the introduction of the Windows Azure Trust Center. So your team is responsible for sort of that, at least the content that's covered there, the various things like security, compliance. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, an intro to what you work on for related to security and compliance on Windows Azure.
That's correct. So a lot of the content that you see on the Windows Azure Trust Center that comes from directly our team. Our primary goal is to ensure the Windows Azure platform is secure. Right? So obviously there are a lot of customers and a lot of different types of applications that are hosted on Windows Azure. So it's a multi-tenant environment. So we want to make sure there are adequate protections in place so the customers, when they host the applications or the data, they feel safe and secure that their data is protected and safeguarded. Right. So that's our primary goal. And we see compliance is another big ask from the customers, because a lot of companies, a lot of verticals like financials, healthcare, they would want to, they need to comply with a bunch of regulations, either HIPAA or ISO 27001. We want to make sure we enable them from the platform point of view, Windows Azure platform point of view, so that when they host applications, they have an end-to-end story on how they comply with the regulations and the compliance requirements.
Okay.
So there's a couple interesting parts there that we kind of might want to call out is it only covers the core aspects, so the developers are still responsible for anything along the lines of SQL Azure or anything in transit on the service bus. So that's an interesting part to note. Also, that your main thing is about the Windows Azure platform. So developers are still responsible for securing their own applications and everything along those lines. Is there any kind of guidance that you might be able to give our audience about how they secure their applications in the cloud using say something like blob storage or table storage?
Right. So the Windows Azure provides you the platform for you to host applications, but the applications that you develop, typically you're responsible for, you know, securing the applications, right? So we have a couple of white papers on the Trust Center that you can find it on the Test Center. One of the white papers is securing or developing secure applications on Windows Azure. So that goes in detail how, when you're developing Windows Azure applications, what are the cloud aspects that you need to ensure that you have adequate protections in place. Primary example is, right, so the platform, we go through penetration testing to make sure, you know, we have adequate security protections and you know, has right protections. Whereas the application that you're developing, either, let's say, web application, right, you want to make sure you go through some kind of penetration testing so the application does not have vulnerabilities such as, let's say, SQL injection or cross-site scripting, right? So that's, you know, those kind of things that, you know, you need to make sure you go through proper security mechanisms and controls before you deploy the application, right? Other things, as part of application, let's say you are using blob storage, right? So there's a storage account key that gets generated when you open an account, right, storage account. You want to make sure that storage account key is protected within your company, right? Because somebody, if a hacker or some unauthorized person gets access to that storage account key, then they will have access to all the data.
How often would you suggest regenerating that key? Because I know that there's the ability to go and regen it in the portal. Mm-hmm. How often would you suggest people would go and actually change that storage key?
Yeah, it really depends on the sensitivity of your data. Normally, we recommend, let's say you have an employee that has access to this storage account key, and the employee leaves the company. Right, so that's, you know, that's the time when you want to roll over the key to a new key so that, you know, the employee who has left the company does not have access to that data anymore.
Yep.
Right, at a minimum, as a best practice, we normally recommend 90 days, but really, you know, if you have very high sensitive data, then you may want to do more often.
Great, cool. So earlier you mentioned some of the security compliance standards, I guess they are, like HIPAA, ISO, something. I don't remember the exact number. ISO XYZ something. So what, you know, I'm not an expert in that, and I think a lot of our developers don't really know what those mean, both in terms of what it means, what are we doing, what do we do to actually get those compliance, and then what does it mean for a developer? Say I build an application, you know, I think HIPAA is healthcare, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm building an application that has to comply with HIPAA, Windows Azure compliance doesn't mean that automatically I can do whatever I want and I'm HIPAA compliant. I still have to do certain things, correct?
That's correct. So let's take an example. You know, ISO 27001 is an international standard for information security. And that's a vertical agnostic, industry agnostic information security best practices that the international standard has, you know, put out. And a lot of companies, both in U.S. as well as across the world, you know, use that as a kind of a bible for information security, right? So an example there, it has 13 domains ranging from how you physically secure your servers to, you know, how you secure your applications, what kind of access control mechanisms you have, kind of disaster recovery mechanisms we have, patching, and those kind of things, right? So patching is, let's take a patching example, right? Patching really says, you know, whenever Microsoft releases patches for the Windows on second Tuesday of every month, we say, okay, you know, the OS operating system should be patched, right? If you're using a web role or worker role as a platform as a service feature, right, so Windows Azure has a guest OS version that we release every mm-hmm. month, right? Typically every month. And depending upon how you configure your application, in the CS config file, there is a parameter that says OS version. If you use OS version and specify the actual guest OS version, then whenever we release a new OS version, we publish a bulletin in MSDN saying, hey, here's the new guest OS version, and here are all the patches that went into the OS version, right? So if you, the easiest thing to do is set that OS version as star, which means we patch your OS honoring your update domain, right? So we relocate your applications and patch servers and bring your application back up.
Okay. Right? So and that's the default configuration, correct? It's set to 1.star, so you get all the one upgrades.
That's correct. Okay. Yeah. If you want to, you know, patch yourself because you are afraid of breaking your application when we roll out new version, right? You can set it to an actual guest OS version, and you get an opportunity to deploy to test application with the new guest OS version in your test environment before you deploy. So we give both the options, and you know, you can choose whichever one that's best suits for you.
Okay. So for and it sounds like for most developers, I mean, especially if you're just doing a fairly standard MVC website or something, you would certainly want to use 1.star or 2.star. But if you're, you know, doing some very hardcore stuff and maybe you're very, very concerned about, you know, breaking changes, that's when you would actually want to do testing. But that would mean you would actually have to be very deliberate, and every month, you know, as we release an OS update, you would test it out and then change the version and then roll it out, because if you waited, you know, potentially a couple months, you're probably open
that's
to some
correct.
Vulnerabilities.
And, right, exactly. Go ahead.
The nice thing to point out about this is it's actually in the CFCFG file. So you can essentially just go into the portal and change it on the fly. And then it will just automatically roll the update for you.
Cool. Good
so
point.
This is a case where, you know, the Windows Azure as a platform provider has certain responsibility. And as an application owner, you have a responsibility in terms of compliance, right? Security and compliance.
Okay, cool. So we talked a little bit about like HIPAA compliance and ISO 27001.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what are all the, are those the only two compliance certifications we have, or are there a variety of them?
There are umpteen number of compliance regulations.
Okay.
Unfortunately, depending upon what your vertical is, right, and which country you're from, and you know, country-specific regulations and things like that. ISO 27001 is broadly adopted and the international standard, but other ones, there is SSAE 16, that's an accounting standard based on the AICPA regulations or accounting guidelines. That one, so let's say, you know, if you're a public company and you have to go through SOX compliance, Sarbanes-Oxley compliance, typically your auditor would ask for some kind of SSAE or SOC, also called as SOC compliance.
Okay.
Right? So we are working on the SSAE compliance for the core services, and when we are ready, you know, we can provide you that SOC report for you. If you're a customer, then you can use that, you know, to meet your SOX compliance. Right? That's one. And we're also compliant with the EU model clauses, European Union model clauses. So we can contractually sign for European Union customers that we meet the European Union model clauses. Those are a bunch of security requirements. Right?
Okay.
The other one is the safe harbor, US safe harbor. So in Windows Azure, you know, when you deploy your applications or storage, you get to choose which region your data want to, right? You want your data to be, right? So in US, we have North and South, Southeastern, I guess?
North Central and South Central.
North Central and South Central, thank you.
Yep.
In Europe, we have two data centers, and if you choose to put your data or application in one of those data centers, right, we guarantee that we meet the U.S. safe harbor law, meaning we don't relocate your data outside the European Union or the European data centers. There are certain exceptions to that that is provided for Microsoft by the Safe Harbor law, except for those circumstances. We generally keep your data within that data center, and when we geo-replicate your data as part of the XTOR feature, right, the second data center is also located in Europe.
Okay.
So that's the safe harbor.
So these compliance certifications. So you said you work on the core platform, like blob storage, table storage, compute. Does that mean that these certifications apply only to those core platforms, or do they also apply to things like SQL Azure, Service Bus, any of the sort of added layers on top of the core platform?
Good question. The certifications apply to across the platform. The Windows Azure Core Services have gone through ISO 27001 certification. What it means is we have to meet the ISO 27001 requirements. There are about 133 requirements. And then the British System International is the independent auditor that would come in and verify that we're in fact complying with all these requirements. Right?
Okay.
So we've done that, went through the independent audit verification by BSI for Windows Azure Core Services. We're working on extending that to the rest of the platform, SQL Azure and Service Bus. So they're coming in future.
Okay.
The current state is Windows Azure Core.
Okay.
Is it right?
So right now, I mean, a common scenario I've heard about is, say, your application store, say HIPAA, you're storing like health record data. I think a common scenario I've heard about is using like an on-premise SQL database, using something like Windows Azure Connect, and you could still be compliant by running your compute in Windows Azure and storing your like data in a different data center, or your enterprise data center. Is that a common scenario? Is that a way to kind of work around some of the various limitations?
Yeah, so there are ways to, since Windows Azure does not support HIPAA compliance right now, there are ways to use third-party ISVs, service providers, to develop some applications offline, in terms of the healthcare data, right? You put it on the offline and use Windows Azure for compute purposes.
Okay.
I would strongly advise you, to talk to your compliance person in regards to, how do you make sure your application is HIPAA compliant.
Okay.
So we won't provide any legal advice
yeah.
on whether whether your application is HIPAA compliant or not.
But we put we'll put a big disclaimer
on the bottom. Right, exactly.
Yeah, not legal advice.
I guess a lot of the compliance things kind of come down to releasing or using personally identifiable information within a non-compliant data center. So that's one of the things that people would really have to avoid when trying to use services on Windows Azure with their HIPAA compliant or whatever compliant data that we don't have the compliance for.
Right.
Is that correct?
Right. The for the HIPAA is the patient health records. Right.
Yeah.
So that's what the HIPAA is all about. So you want to make sure you don't use that Windows Azure. Store that data unless you vetted through this through your compliance person.
Cool.
So now that we've talked about compliance, there's still kind of a scenario if I was to deploy something to Windows Azure mm-hmm. and something was to happen within the Windows Azure services. How do you, does your team work with disaster recovery at all? And how do you how does the system within Windows Azure work to make sure that everything's still highly available?
Good question. So the Windows Azure platform has proper disaster recovery and business continuity mechanisms. So we try to keep the Windows Azure up 24/7, right? Let's say you're building an application and deploying an application, right? And you go to the portal and choose a data center that you want to deploy your application on. Why you want to build an application that's highly available, right? So if you deploy your application only in one data center in Windows Azure, right? If the data center goes down, then you get a hit on the availability, right? Because you have to take that application and redeploy it in another data center. Right? So normally the recommended practice is if you want to have highly available application across the data centers, I would recommend distributing your load across two data centers, right? And build your application and deploy application in two data centers, right? So if a data center goes down, you don't have this manual process of redeploying that application in the second data center. You still have the second data center, you still have the application that's running in second data center that you can direct the workload, load to, right? So that's one practice. So that's where, again, Windows Azure provides some capabilities, and if you want to make use of that capabilities to meet your security and availability reasons, right?
Using like traffic manager.
Yeah, traffic manager would be good.
Yeah, traffic manager.
So we talked about availability. So what if I don't care. I mean, 99.95, the normal availability is enough for me. And maybe I don't want to pay for two data centers, or again, availability just is lower on my priority list. But obviously, I want to make sure my data is never lost. If I'm using, say, blob storage, but I'm only in one data center, what are the things that are available on Windows Azure to make sure that, the data center burns down or something, a really bad disaster.
Yeah.
Is my data lost? Is it only in one data center, or how do we handle that?
Yeah, good question. So Windows Azure, if you're using Xtol, the blobs or tables or queues, right, your data is automatically replicated, at least two copies and possibly three copies. And by default, we also geo-replicate your data to another data center, right? So if a data center goes down, we have mechanisms to basically bring that data back, right? If a disk gets corrupted, then we have another disk that we pull the data from, and we check the consistency across these two or across multiple disks, right? So that's for the hardware failures. Mm-hmm. Right? Let's say your application has some bug in your application, and you go and delete your data, right? Some human on your side goes and deletes the data, right? Then all the copies gets erased. Mm-hmm. And so you want to make sure, if you need backup, so you probably want to do some kind of offline periodic backups of this data, so that you have that data even if somebody accidentally or maliciously deletes that data.
Okay. So it's a good idea to have a backup plan and use maybe a third-party tool that you can download whatever information would be in that storage container on a regular basis, and just basically have that as a fire route kind of plan in-house.
Yeah.
To avoid any kind of issues that you might run into.
Right. Or even, you could even copy, the North America data centers to the Europe data centers or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so, so that's a lot of really great information. Talk about the various security compliance. The question a lot of people are going to have is, though, where do I find all this information? Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned on the show a couple weeks ago, we actually just launched what we call the Windows Azure Trust Center, and we have this online resource that kind of has all this stuff listed out, which is great. Maybe you want to walk us through this a little bit?
So it's divided into four sections: security, privacy, compliance, and then there are a bunch of FAQs. Right? Security has a lot of white papers on ranging from how Windows Azure security model. So obviously, being a multi-tenant platform, our model is we want to protect customers from each other as well as our platform from the customers themselves. Right. So there is a paper on how Windows Azure security is built, and I was also talking to you about the best practices for developing Windows Azure applications. Right? There's a white paper on how you want to do threat models, what kind of scenarios and what kind of threats that you would come across in the cloud environment. So it's a good recommendation on that one. There are a lot of FAQs also. So this is the best practices, and this is the platform security, right? And there are a lot of other resources on, for example, how you use ACS and other things, right? Here's another question that we commonly come across for the applications that you build. you know, how do you penetration test? Do you need to take any approval from Windows Azure or from Microsoft? Right? There is going to be a form pretty soon, really soon, on the Windows Azure Trust Center where you can go and fill out that form. So we will allow you to penetration test your application within certain limitations, such as, you know, we don't allow you to try to perform a denial of service type of attacks on Windows Azure, right? There would be a form that would be available really soon. And what we need is, you know, fill out that form and send us that form so that we know you're performing this penetration test.
When they fill out that form, do we like turn off any monitoring or anything, or do we still run the application the same exact way? It's just that we know you're doing it, so we don't delete your app and say you're abusing our system.
Exactly.
Okay. So, yeah. But all the like security stays in place,
right,
and everything.
Okay. Yeah. We don't change anything. It's just like the normal platform.
Okay.
Really interesting. If you want to go back in the archives for the Cloud Cover Show, Ryan Dunn and Steve Marks actually did an episode where Ryan kind of created a site that would just do a little bit of load testing based on Windows
Hammer or whatever.
So that's really interesting to go back and review. Luckily, he didn't get taken offline because I think they only use like 15 instances or something like that. But we don't encourage anyone to go out and make a denial of service platform. It's just a nice, easy way to test your own application.
Is there any guidance on how to do penetration testing? I mean, if I run, say, my servers that are doing the testing in another Windows Azure data center, is that gonna, you know, is that a best practice, or, you know, is there stuff that's happening that's, you know, Windows Azure isn't gonna allow me to like make too many requests or, you know, outbound? Do I have to use my own data center? Is there any guidance around that?
So typically, you know, the people use the OWASP top 10 security vulnerabilities, right?
Okay.
In terms of, you know, what we have in place in Windows Azure is, if you are impacting other tenants or other customers, right, we normally throttle you so that, you know, it's not impacting other customers, right? But, you know, you can run it in the standard Windows Azure environment.
Okay, cool.
The compliance is another place where we go through, you know, what certifications that we have. The British Standards Institution was a third-party independent auditor that verified our ISO 27001 and the scope of what was in the ISO 27001. And there are a lot of FAQs also. We constantly update and revise the content here as we make progress on the compliance regulations and other things.
Great. Well, that's really interesting. I mean, it's sort of, you know, I guess security isn't maybe the most fun thing to think about in your app, but obviously hugely important. You know, you don't want to ignore it, otherwise, you know, you probably run into some problems. So, I mean, a lot of really great information, and like you said, the Trust Center has even more where people can access that. And we'll include links to the white papers you mentioned, some of the MSDN articles that were mentioned, and of course, to the Trust Center. So, cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us. This was very informative, and hopefully the viewers learned a little more how to make their app secure.
Thank you.
So I guess that kind of brings us down to that special time that Wade used to carry on quite long about. But I guess it's a great time for the tip of the week. So I guess Bob's going to go out and do his magical thing, and hopefully it'll be a little bit security related. But then I guess we'll see you back here in a little bit.
Take good care of her, Mrs. Ames. Bye.
Bye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And we're back.
During the break we were talking, and I really want to comment and that your introduction to the tip of the week really lacked an enthusiasm. You know, normally we do the kind of up high or
True.
Throw your arms in the air. I gotta say, I'm kind of just, it's like, you know, the what Saturday Night Live, it's Saturday night, and you were kind of just like, it's Saturday night. So I don't know if you'll be allowed to do it again.
I have an idea. Do you remember a great little internet meme that went out there quite some time ago? A little Leroy Jenkins?
I don't know.
No? So I have this little thing that I do.
I didn't even know what American Idol was on the last week. So you didn't watch it yet.
I don't. Yeah.
We were talking about some sort of reality TV shows, and I didn't even know what those are. Nonetheless, you're Jenkins or whatever.
All right. So I guess we can do a little Leroy Jenkins. It should excite people a little bit. But essentially, all right, let's do this. Windows Azure.
You sounded like Dirty Harry just then.
Hopefully everyone's excited now.
All right, that was more, you made up for it. That was more than enough. All right, so I don't even know. Let's just end it right here. That
you can't recover from
I'm
that.
Out. No, okay. So, where were we? Okay, so our tip of the week is we have a blog post. So yeah, basically this blog post is 5 ways to reduce your cost on Windows Azure. Very common thing. This is a disaster.
Do it.
Sorry. This is at some point in the show it ends up total chaos like this, and they try to. Oh, man, we've been here for a long time.
All right, let's get going.
All right, we're not starting the whole thing over. We're just going.
No,
with
we're
going to
restart just the blog post, right?
No, we're going to leave the jokes in about cost because I can't redo them. They won't be funny. So Patty goes and talks about some common five ways to reduce your cost on Windows Azure. First one is pretty obvious, you know, delete your suspended accounts. Some people don't know that, you know, we still keep your VM if it's suspended. It's still running in our data center, still taking up resources, allocating CPU, et cetera. So we are still charging you for that. So the most obvious one is don't leave your suspended staging environments or whatever.
Yeah, and he
running.
Actually calls out to one of our MVPs, Mike Wood, who created a tool called Graybox that actually monitors deployments that might have been sitting out there that you should bring down, but it will pop up a tray notification and tell you that, hey, you have something deployed. Should it really be up there or
cool.
Did you just forget it?
That's awesome. I'll have to use. No, I'm not going to use that. But I don't have. I just leave everything suspended at all times. No, it seems really good. And then, you know, VM size is another sort of common one. You don't always need the extra large instance. You know, maybe if you're just doing some background processing on a worker role or something, maybe a small or even an extra small might work out for you. And obviously, huge cost savings for that. Co-locate your Windows Azure services. Don't put your storage account in Europe and your compute in North America, because that will result in a lot of...
You'll get a lot of a data transaction, but bandwidth costs going between the two data centers. So.
And a whole lot of unnecessary latency. So. Yeah. And actually, one of the things that sometimes people do is select anywhere. Do we still have the anywheres?
Yeah, there are still anywhere US.
A common one is if you select anywhere US, which my default recommendation is don't use that unless you really know why you need to use that. Because if you select, say, anywhere US with your compute, create a storage account, and select anywhere US, they may very well be in different data centers, and again, you're going to get charged for that. Yeah. So I would always recommend, unless you really know why and have a very real reason to select anywhere, I would say, you know, select a actual data center for both of them, or use, you know, affinity groups, things like that.
So I guess the last two would be making sure that your applications are scaled to the appropriate size, because you want to make sure that you're only handling as much load as you actually have. So if you have a lot of extra instances sitting up there, just make sure you scale them back to kind of work with what load you have going on at present time. And then the last one is making sure you set up diagnostics and actually monitor the use of your applications, just to ensure that that's a good way to find out when you should be scaling back down or if you should be scaling up to start accepting new load to your application. So
and you can use things like storage monitoring, stuff like that. I actually, before I was at Microsoft, the last company I worked for, I had a similar issue where it was actually my last few weeks at this company. It was not deliberate, but I wrote a bug into our code, which, so the goal was to actually follow this. It was, you know, scale up on worker roles and also scale up on threads reading a queue. So basically to optimize, you know, get the most number of reads when the queue is busy and scale down. I missed some sort of like greater than or equal sign or something, and basically it ended up just spinning up a whole ton of threads on a queue and you know making requests as fast as possible, 24 hours a day on empty on empty threads. So that was a little bit of a bug, and it was my like parting gift. Although it was absolutely not deliberate, it was really bad because I like one of the last things I was working on. We deployed it, and then you know I went to Microsoft, and you know I still was helping them out after I was here because it was like all of a sudden our storage transactions.
Why is our bill so
big? Yeah, so it was kind of bad, but you know it shows that it's good to pay attention to that stuff because it was literally like one simple, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was like one very simple line of code that I forgot to, you know, do some check, and it just kept everything running. And we weren't, actually it was before the storage monitoring existed, but had we, you know, been monitoring that, we would have detected it a lot sooner.
Yeah.
So yeah, very important to monitor that stuff because even though in you know, the storage transactions are inexpensive, if you run 50 threads on a bunch of extra large machines, they can get very expensive. Yeah. So, great. Well, I think that's our show. As always, if you have any feedback or questions, follow us on Twitter at Cloud Cover Show. And oh, and Bob loves the. We'll let Krishna. Do you have Twitter?
I don't have it yet.
You don't have what?
No Twitter.
Compliance, you know, we got to.
You're very secret. That's
very
true.
Secret, bond yes. With a compliance.
Preparing for the show is rather difficult. It's like, can we talk about this? No. Can we talk about this? No. Can we talk about this? In fact, Bob's editing out a bunch of stuff that we aren't allowed. No. Half the show is going to be bleeped out. So okay, well, we can't do it then. Bob's. We'll give Bob a break on the message. He got a little feisty last week and edited some.
We don't want to push your luck too much.
Yeah. Don't push your luck. So.
All right. And with that, I guess we're at the end of the show.
Do you want me to stop talking? Is that?
We have been here for quite some time.
We've been. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's about it.
Thanks for joining us, and I guess we'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks a lot.
And it was very informative. So thanks a lot.